Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
From AccuWeather, this is Everything Under the Sun. Real news and real stories covering topics from the worlds of science, sports, and space. It's all the information you need to weatherproof your life. And now here's the host of Everything Under the Sun, AccuWeather meteorologist Dean DeVore.
The West Coast has been pummeled by storm after storm. This parade of storms with deep moisture has been creating situations we haven't seen in 150, 160 years. And it's had its toll and its price paid on people and infrastructure and buildings. What is that price? And is it offsetting the benefit of all this storminess, which is alleviating a drought situation that was causing all kinds of problems? That's our first Rays of Focus segment on Everything Under the Sun this week. We'll also talk about weather and history with our friend Evan Myers. Friends, sit back and relax. It's time to talk about Everything Under the Sun from AccuWeather.com. It's been a parade of impactful storms, massive problems caused by them, tremendous amounts of rain, flooding, mud and debris slides, people displaced from their homes. It's been a parade that has gone on for the better part of weeks, and we're getting finally to the end of it. But all this negative problems has actually had an upside in the West, and that is some alleviation of the drought, but at what cost? Friends, this is our first Rays of Focus segment, and I'm really happy to bring in our chief meteorologist, John Porter, and Bill Waddell from the AccuWeather Network, who does amazing work out in the field and out in the midst of this storms and the problems, reporting for us at AccuWeather and the AccuWeather Network. And I wanted to bring the both of you in to talk about this. I got to spend about 3 or 4 days out in California, out in Los Angeles, right around the New Year's holiday. It was kind of that prelude to the really big storm that came about a week or so after that. But it was pretty impactful. And I saw some of the problems that were mounting up that, you know, I've been to California quite a few times in my life. And it was pretty bad. And then it only got worse with this last round of storms. And I know that Bill and John, we've all been watching this situation. And I think the thing that struck me the most in this is kind of the catch-22 of all of this, how bad it's been, but we needed it to get rid of some drought that was causing problems in its own right. And I think that's kind of the major focus that I want to talk about here on this podcast today. Bill, I want to start with you. And I want to have you go through maybe a couple of clips of people that were on the ground with you in this. But as somebody who's been around and now traveled and been reporting for the AccuWeather Network the last few years, in terms of overall effect, how bad was this from your point of view and from the people that you were talking to? What were they saying to you?
You know, it was a really tough past few weeks out there in California. Our team has well forecasted this event. We've been pushing out the alerts on the AccuWeather app, so many articles, there's been so much news coverage. And I believe just the magnitude and the relentless rounds of these storms, it still took some people off guard. We know that some people were prepared, but a few folks that I spoke to, they were stuck in their cars on the side of the highway overnight. They thought they had time to travel between these storms. We know that California, it's really a unique area. You've got the coast, you've got the mountains, you've got the valleys. Some of these areas really are susceptible to the flooding, and people that have lived in that area, some of them for decades, told us it has been a long time since they've seen flooding like this. And not just one round of flooding, but how quickly the water levels went up, how quickly they dropped, and then how quickly they would come right back up even higher after that third, fourth, fifth round of storm. So it's been an exhausting past few weeks for people.
We've heard the terminology, John Porter, you know, river of moisture, atmospheric river. Some people have called it the Pineapple Express because a lot of the origins come from that area in the Pacific that's adjacent or near to Hawaii. But historically, It's been about, what, 150, 170 years since we've seen this kind of situation unfold in terms of just the totality of this. Is that about right in my perspective there?
I think so. It's the totality that we've all been talking about here. That the thing that struck me is that any one of these big storms, one of these potent storms bringing heavy rainfall, the mudslides, the heavy mountain snow, any one of them on their own would have been very significant and noteworthy. But what was really impactful here, it was the combination of them, storm after storm, a relentless deluge that really exacerbated all the flooding and mudslide issues much worse than they would have been if it was just that one individual storm. So it was that whole campaign of storms that really, as you mentioned, Dean, had a tropical connection, a moisture feed of some 2,500 miles out into the Pacific, translating that and tapping into that deep tropical Pacific moisture and aiming it directly for California. This wasn't something that dropped in from the north and you only got a part of the moisture. It was aimed, the moisture channel was aimed directly at California. And I think that's why, as Bill mentioned, we were highlighting that risk particularly many days and weeks in advance of the concern that this parade of storms was going to have a big impact on people and businesses.
Bill was on the ground for the network talking to people. Let's bring some sound in from Martin Becerra. He, I believe, Bill, he was in Santa Barbara County, right? That's where Martin was?
He was, yes. He was one of the unfortunate drivers who ended up spending the night on the side of a ramp along the 101, right in the, right in the Santa Barbara area because of the flooding and the mudslides.
So let's hear what he had to say about his experience in that.
I've been living pretty much, I said, my whole life right here in this county, Santa Barbara. I'm from Santa Mariana, but nothing I've ever seen like last night. Nothing in my 50 years living right here in the county, you know. But never seen like this storm that hit us yesterday. Nothing, you know. Not even when was it back in 2005. For me, last night, yesterday was horrible, terrible.
The perspective from those people, never seen anything like it. And some of the pictures that I saw of these rivers of water and mud and debris going down these major roads, the 101 was basically a river in a couple of these scenarios. And so for folks that have to get around and do things, and there's no escaping having to get around in California because there's no clear path to go from one place to the other. You either have to go around a mountain or up a valley or something. It's very difficult in that part of the world to travel from point A to point B without doing something, going over a mountain or going through a valley or an arroyo that can flood easily. So these people, I think, Bill, just it had to be an onslaught of all these storms. And then, you know, no rest for the weary. You think you're getting better. And then all of a sudden, the next one comes. And it's, like you said, worse than the one before. And so that had to take a mental toll for those of you covering it on the ground and what you saw with people dealing with it themselves on the ground, Bill.
Absolutely. I mean, I could say the past year and a half, we have seen a lot of weather events and weather disasters across the country. And we know that Montecito, Santa Barbara, of course, has a history with bad mudslides, bad flooding. And that's happened in the past. Martin was not in the area for those events. We know we just had the 5-year anniversary. Again, for different people, these are different perspectives. And even though they may have lived in the area a couple of years ago, they escaped the worst of the last round. But this one, just because, you know, as you said, it wasn't one or two storms. We've had days and days and weeks. A lot of people only have so much time to put their lives on hold. They still have to go to work. They still have to pick up their kids from school. And Martin was one of those folks who told us he was driving down to LAX to pick up a couple family members who had flown in. He was trying to get them home in between these storm events. Yeah. And what happened in that area of Montecito, right near the line with Santa Barbara, there were two creeks in the area. They just flooded and they rose so rapidly. We knew this was coming in a lot of different areas, but even for the emergency officials, it's tough to pinpoint sometimes which creek is going to flood in what spot first. They want to keep the roads open. You know, we've got ambulances. We still have critical transportation going on. We can't, you know, nobody wants to shut down an entire major highway for days on end because of a maybe, you know, so they try and keep them open while they're safe. But what happened is so much water, so much mud, so much debris and rocks started clogging those little creeks that run under the 101. And unfortunately, that was the spot, one of the spots that flooded first. And some people, Martin was one of those people, he had his family in the car. They were essentially stuck between two roadblocks. Wow. So the 101 ended up being shut down in several places. He was in a sedan, not a lot of ground clearance with his family. There's a roadblock in front of him, a roadblock beside him. A lot of the side streets were either flooded, washed out. And, especially in the night when you have your family in a car, you don't want to put them in more danger. You don't want to get stuck in mud, stuck in another mudslide. So he made that gut decision. The safest thing to do was stay right on the side of that 101 ramp. And he said they didn't sleep because of all of the road crews coming in overnight, all of the ambulances, the police and fire. And he said he's so glad he did. It was the best decision he could have made because he was right there with officials. He was at a construction site with a porta potty nearby. A lot of other people in the area, they were not as lucky. They were either stuck on the 101 overnight or stuck on these side roads. And, the emergency response, it was spread thin. I mean, there were a lot of resources that were spread thin and people were calling 911 for help. And it was taking a while, to get that help just because there were so many calls coming in all at the same time. And these crews have been working in really tough conditions out there trying to help people.
And that's another example, too, of one of the things that we've seen in a lot of scenarios lately where water is involved, how quickly the water can rise.
Yeah.
And Bill, as you're talking about how quickly a situation can go from being dangerous to downright life-threatening in the matter of sometimes just a couple of seconds.
Seconds, yeah.
And that's as we continue to deal with water-related emergencies in the country. I think that's going to continue to be a factor here going forward, is just realizing how quick people always comment after these disasters of how fast a dangerous situation escalates to being truly life-threatening. And that's why we saw all the video from California of these swift water rescues from helicopters. And thank goodness that this was well forecast, because that enabled the government and public safety resources to bring those extra resources in and make them available, but it still was stretching them so thin due to the widespread nature of the unrelenting rain.
Let's hear from a couple of more folks. Marcel Waite, one of the things in these cuts that he talks about balance, right? And I think this is where, for those of us that deal with California, we understand that balance. We've got fire season, we have burn, we have problems, and then we get some rainy season, but the balance is usually there. It's not the wild swings of tremendous drought and tremendous defoliation because of that. And then on top of that, now 150-year flood. And so it's harder to strike a balance when you've got extremes of the weather on one side or the other. But let's hear from him a little bit. This is Marcel Waite, and then Bill can tell us a little bit more about his story.
You got to pay for the beauty, So we have crazy fires in the summertime, and then we have this in the wintertime, and it'd be nice to have a little bit of a balance. But this is extreme for around here. I mean, people haven't seen this since, 1982 or more than 10 years, 20 years ago.
Bill, tell us briefly about Marcel's story. And then the other thing about that, it's always interesting to me because of the way that California has been populated, the first push in the 50s from the east, and then over the years, more and more people, everybody has a different perspective of this historic nature of this. Some people go back into the 50s and some people are just in the last 4 or 5 years of what's gone on. So talk a little bit about Marcel's situation.
Yeah, Marcel is a younger guy. I would say he's in his late 30s. I met him on a bicycle in Santa Cruz with a bunch of families. In between the heavy rounds of storms, everybody was out in Santa Cruz watching the San Lorenzo River. And we're seeing all of these huge logs, all of these debris gushing down the river, hitting the bridge supports, a lot of people keeping a close eye on the levees. And that's one of the conversations that keeps coming up. I've been out there, this past summer in the fall. Thank goodness a lot of people are so grateful that California lucked out with this past wildfire season. Not nearly as much land burned as we've seen in previous years. And that's one silver lining. They really lucked out for a number of reasons. But that's all we heard about in the summer and the fall. It is so hot. It is so dry. Please, let's have a good wet season. Let's get something. Let's not have a repeat of the past winter where we had a record-breaking December and then the driest January, February, March on record. So you have all of these people hoping, wishing, praying for rain. And then here comes the California wet season. And oh my gosh, just this parade of storms. So that we know California is a tough place to balance. They've got some wacky weather, some really unique geography. It's what makes it so beautiful and so special and such a huge agricultural hub. And all of a sudden we've had these parade of storms, well forecast, well in advance. But I think just the scope of it, really, it was just a lot for people to comprehend. And we're in this era now where everyone has a smartphone. We're seeing so many videos in real time on TikTok, on Twitter, on Facebook. I think just the scope of seeing all the flooding all at the same place, because even by the time we get to some of these flooded areas, we have video of a car that was flooded in Santa Cruz County where fire crews had to help them. And I saw social media comments. How could they not get out of the water on their own? It's only a few inches. And we have to explain, the water was up to their side mirrors, almost right. Their window. It
right.
Rises and it falls so quickly. So, you know, it was months of hoping and waiting for this rain. We don't want a repeat of last winter. And then we're just bombarded with all of this water. And again, as you said, the infrastructure, a lot of places are being built up. We've got a lot of concrete. We've got a lot of asphalt. And the runoff isn't going in the same places that it was 10 or 20 years ago.
And then the other thing about this is over the last several years, the amount of homeless encampments in these cities and these places has gone up dramatically. And the last cuts I'd like to play is from Diane. Tell us a little bit about where she was from. And then her, I think, was striking to me about she is a person that's an activist. She really has made a life's mission to help the homeless by taking a day out to feed them. And all of those people who were living in places that got flooded, that's the places that they went to set up their encampments. And yet now those are all devastated. Let's hear a little bit from Diane. And then again, Bill, you can talk briefly about her situation.
I was here when they had the 1955 flood and lost my house, lost my dog, lost everything. And this is, I've never seen anything like this. I've been in one other flood in New Orleans, which I guess is really common, but I did not know that. And we lost our apartment. But this, I feed the homeless people once a week that live down here. I don't know where these people are. It's like they just disappeared.
That's a situation that I think we're going to maybe uncover a little bit more here in the next couple of weeks, Bill. That aspect of this, not only has this been devastating to the residents of California, but the people that were in California that didn't have a home, but were using it as a home, have been devastated too.
Yeah, these bridges and overpasses, this is where some people take shelter. And let's just remember that California, it's beautiful, but it is an expensive place to live. You know, the times are tough, things are expensive. And for a lot of people, we're one car accident, one job layoff, one house fire away from homelessness. And that's some of the people that I've been speaking to. You know, some of these stories have changed and how easy it is for people to lose their homes or find themselves in that spot, even if it's a couple weeks, couple months. Yeah, Diane is very concerned about some of the people. We know there's volunteer groups and they've been checking in on these people in these encampments and they're warning them ahead of time. Some people don't have smartphones. Some of them, unfortunately, you know, they're not getting these push alerts on the apps and they don't have the luxury of seeing these forecasts ahead of time. So these volunteer groups are going out on foot, warning people, this is not a safe place to be. And in recent days, especially on the tail end of this parade of storms, we saw helicopter rescues in Orange County in spots like that. And I'm sure we're going to be hearing more and more that some of these people caught in these very precarious situations, they are experiencing homelessness. So yeah, unfortunately, we're seeing homeowners, we're seeing agriculture workers and farmers being caught in the wrong place at the wrong time, or they thought they had enough time to travel and get out. But yeah, this community especially hit hard. And there are concerns. I mean, they've been looking for missing people or at least unaccounted for. They're just trying to make sure everyone is accounted for. And that's one of the community members, unfortunately, in the days, even weeks to come, we may still be getting more bad news out of this. There may be some more heartbreaking discoveries.
John, I know AccuWeather over the years has become a kind of a source to put a monetary value on some of these situations, these disastrous weather situations. And Dr. Joel Myers and you and the team have put together the estimated cost of this parade of storms. And it's what, over $30 billion is what we're looking at?
It's a big number. We're estimating the total damage and economic loss from the parade of storms to be between $31 and $34 billion. And that takes into account all of the types of damage that we're talking about, the flooding, the mudslides, the numerous trees that fell, the property damage that occurred, over 2 million reported power outages, all the damage to infrastructure. You know, Dean, we were talking about the concerns about the issues around possibly levees and even dams being breached in this particular situation, which occurred in some spots, particularly relative to the levees. And so that's a big number, as well as all the disruption to commerce, to people's jobs, to businesses, thousands of flight delays and cancellations over the parade of storms. It added up, and it added up fast. And Dean, one of the things that I pointed out on our network this morning was the fact that oftentimes homeowners sometimes are surprised when they go to file an insurance claim. If they don't have the separate flood insurance, many times homeowners insurance does not cover for flooding damage. And oftentimes in these situations, people find themselves in a precarious position where their homeowners insurance will not cover it if they did not elect the National Flood Insurance Program or other types of flood insurance. And even if they did have flood insurance, sometimes they can end up in a situation where the actual damage was so significant that the payout doesn't end up covering it. So in these situations, unfortunately, we often find people end up being underinsured relative to the actual damage that was sustained, just because you're talking about flooding. And Dean, as we've talked about before, once water gets into a structure, the damage, the cost to repair it really escalates versus other types of damage.
Well, and I think, you know, we've seen the levees and the dams that have already been breached or broken, but we don't know the damage that we can't see underneath because of all this pressure of all this water and problems and the debris and stuff. So this is going to be probably like peeling back an onion, like we're seeing in these major storms, where, you know, a lot of things are visible to us now in terms of problems, but there's still a lot under the surface. And I think Bill mentioned that too. The good news is, though, real quick, John, I think we're nearing the end of this parade, right? It seems like things are shifting a little bit, and the storminess should not be as bad here as we go over the next couple of weeks, as that amount of moisture available to these storms is going to get cut off a bit.
Yeah, that's a great way to say it. And I think that's it's going to be very welcome news for people to dry out a bit here in California. Most of the moisture is going to be directed to the north. Now, it doesn't mean that we can't have some rain and mountain snow events, but they don't look like they're going to be the type with this prolific moisture that we've been dealing with here in recent weeks. This has been such an unprecedented weather pattern. We'll be drying out on average. Our long-range team, though, does think that we could be dealing with more events in February that can bring some rain and mountain snow once again. So it looks like the wet season, oh, it's not, probably not over at this particular point, but we're going to have time to take a deep breath here and start the long road to recovery in many of these communities.
And as Bill pointed out earlier, we're all rooting for more rain and more mountain snow. That's what we want. We want snow up in the mountains. So it's takes the natural process of getting released slower in the spring rather than all at once, Bill. I think that's what everybody wants, as you pointed out, with that record-breaking December and then bupkis in January and February. Even if we do get a little pause here, which is well needed, we hope for a few more rounds to get things going up in the mountains, at least with snow cover.
Absolutely. One interesting thing I want to point out, we did a report with our lead long-range forecaster, Paul Pastelot. Let's keep in mind, all of this rain and precipitation means more vegetation growth. A lot of that already happening in Southern California. We want to be really careful with this. We're hoping to be optimistic, but it's worth keeping note because the fire crews, Cal Fire, is already discussing this. How much vegetation is going to grow this spring? How quickly are things going to dry out? Are we going to have a bumper crop of grass and vegetation that's going to dry out quickly and create even more potential fuel for the fire? So that's something that Paul Pastelot and his team is already talking about. Again, no one wants to be a Debbie Downer. But
we have to be real. Realism is where we need to be. And this is the, you know, Marcel wanted balance. I don't know if we're going to get it because of we're going from one extreme to the other. Great points. Bill, thank you for all your hard work on the network and all of the great work that you did there. And John, thank you so much for I know you're proud of the team. As Bill said, this was well forecasted and we knew this was coming. And so people had the information in front of them. I think sometimes just because of the nature of this kind of situation, which is very rare and not a lot of people have experience with it, they may not have known what to expect with what we were forecasting for them. So I know everybody's proud in that regard.
We did a great job in terms of getting that information out and highlighting the risk for this being something that people may not have seen before in their lifetime. And we used some of the strongest language that I can recall we've ever used in terms of a California flooding situation. Bernie Reno and I on the AccuWeather Network described this as bringing the risk for widespread life-threatening flooding that would be catastrophic in some areas, and highlighting that concern for mudslides. We thought that'd be a big deal. There were over 400 reports of mudslides in recent weeks. That just puts into context just the widespread nature of these issues. Some communities we thought would be cut off, at least briefly, that occurred as well. So those impacts were described. We used very strong language in advance, and we know it helped people to better prepare, people and communities to better prepare. Dean, to your point, I'm afraid that in the world of climate change that we're dealing with now, that these episodes of really dry conditions followed by periods of extreme rainfall is more of what we're going to be dealing with in California. That's going to bring more of these kinds of issues, both from a drought and also a excessive rainfall and flooding perspective, for the decades to come. So I think this is perhaps a sign of what's ahead.
John Porter, Bill Waldell, thank you so much. That is our first Rays of Focus here on Everything Under the Sun. Speaking of mud and debris, we're going to go back in history with our friend Evan Myers talking about the mud march that made a big difference in the Civil War. That's coming up next. This is Everything Under the Sun from AccuWeather.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Whether you're at home getting ready for work, packing the kids' lunch, or commuting, listen to AccuWeather Daily. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, and you'll get the top trending weather story of the day every day.
Friends, welcome back into Everything Under the Sun from AccuWeather.com as we relaunch our podcast and get it into a situation where I think you're going to appreciate how we do this going forward. We're going to use that first Rays of Focus segment as we did earlier here today, talking about big ticket weather information and stories, including those big storms. And then after that, the second segment is going to kind of rotate between areas of focus. One is weather and history with our friend Evan Myers, who's just about to join me here. Also talk about sports and weather, astronomy and weather, gardening, science and weather. So each of those segments after our main Rays of Focus segment will kind of touch on weather-related things, where the weather meets your life. And certainly, the weather and history have certainly been hand in hand. In fact, one of our great resources here, just because he has been part of history for so long, is Evan Myers.
I'm not sure how to take that, Dean.
Well, you'll take it and you'll go from there.
I will indeed. Well, you know, history is part of our lives.
Right.
You know, we remember events, not just major events, but events in our lives that relate to history and what happened that day, whether it be a wedding or first day of school, all those things. We kind of put those two together.
And then the interesting part that I think from all of this, when I look at historical events, is, you know, some people think, well, this is the first time we've ever had a storm like this. Well, unfortunately, that's not really the case. We've had storms and problems. But the thing that's interesting to me is looking back at how they dealt with things that, you know, right now are problematic for us, but with technology and industry and machines, we get out of these problems a lot quicker than they did back in some of these historical events. So what we're going to do, Evan and I, each month, we're going to have a segment. We're going to look at a couple of events and maybe focus on one
in that particular month. Just want to kind of mention, you know, as we get into the middle latter part of January here, usually every 4 years, inauguration time. And that inauguration in 1961 was pretty amazing. First of all, it's the inauguration of John F. Kennedy. Some great rhetoric from that speech that we'll drop in here, I think, in a moment. But the weather was absolutely problematic. Just talk some highlights about how bad it was.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. The forecast wasn't the AccuWeather forecast yet, because AccuWeather wasn't right. But the forecast was actually, well, I was born. I just turned 11 years old. I wasn't born yet,
but we'll leave it at that.
You talked about me in history, so yeah, I had to throw that in.
Yeah.
I was a big Kennedy supporter. My family was, and I was looking forward to the inauguration. The weather forecast, getting back to that, was for a couple of rain showers starting late in the day before on the 19th in Washington, D.C., and maybe the morning of the 20th. That was the forecast. That was not what happened.
What happened was a blizzard, right?
Well, it wasn't quite a blizzard, but it was close. It was a big snowstorm. And part of the problem was it started snowing in the late afternoon as people started to come home from work. The problem is it snowed, as us meteorologists might say, in a thump. It was all at once.
Boom.
It was several inches an hour, and people just got stuck in the snow because they didn't expect it. You know, people used to put chains on their tires and stuff. None of that.
We know how that area, just in a flake of snow, even to today, they just go into a tizzy,
well,
right?
Well, sometimes, yeah, that's true. And so people just abandoned their cars.
Wow.
So they abandoned their cars. There was about 8 to 12 inches of snow across the Washington, D.C. metro area.
Very significant for them.
And so they had the inauguration was the next day, and the inaugural parade. There have been times when the inauguration, certain events in the past were suspended, but not this time. And they had to clean it up. They had to figure out how to do it. Now, luckily, the snow ended right around dawn or before dawn, and they had all morning to clean up. But what did they do? They weren't ready for it. It wasn't like today when the plows are ready. And so, and as you mentioned, the sophistication level of technology was lower. So what did they do? They had to bring in dump trucks, front end loaders,
wow.
You know, not actually plows. I mean, they had some of those. Sanders, the Army, they used flamethrowers. To melt some of the snow. It's interesting because D.C. sanitation workers and streets department worked hand in hand with Army equipment. They had to move 1,400 cars that were abandoned along the inaugural route. They had to get them out of the way. And we've had those scenes from Buffalo recently about cars stuck and how to get them out of the way. Obviously, they didn't have that kind of heavy snow that they had in Buffalo, but still, they had to move them. So they had to get that out. Another contingent of troops cleared the reviewing stands. And 1,700 Boy Scouts, the call went out, the Boy Scouts, help, help. 1,700 Boy Scouts showed up, you know, organizing their troops and helped clean things up. And the inauguration and the inaugural parade went off as scheduled because thousands of people pitched in. And as John Kennedy, first president born in the 20th century, spoke, it was kind of like a fresh blanket of snow and a new beginning.
And these are some of the words that he said that are so memorable to us today.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
So, interesting stuff. Let's go back now. 100 years earlier than that, with the one that I wanted to focus on. It's called Burnside's Mud March.
Yes, indeed.
Right?
It's not funny. It was during the Civil War.
It was the Civil War. Another situation where the weather impacted a situation where it really changed the way things were in the war at that time. Talk a little bit about that, Evan.
Absolutely. Prior to the Mud March, you have to set the scene. In December, mid-December of 1862, so the war was, what, a year and a half old,
right.
There was the Battle of Fredericksburg, which was undoubtedly the worst defeat for the Union forces in the Eastern Theater and perhaps during the whole war.
Right.
13,000 Union casualties as they assaulted Lee's troops along the hills above Fredericksburg. Lee suffered about 5,000 casualties, but it was a total rout for the Union Army, and the Union Army was its morale was low. So the head of the army at that time, Ambrose Burnside, decided he needed to buck up the morale and also perhaps catch Lee's troops napping a little bit because of the victory.
They had had success, and they were probably just kind of eased out of their offensive there.
And it's the winter, and throughout history, even up to today, during harsh winter conditions, sometimes wars get not suspended, but they slow down.
We've seen that in Ukraine and Russia over the last couple of years, right?
Absolutely. So Burnside decided, I'm going to take the initiative. So he moved a huge Union army, and he wanted to move it across the Rappahannock in northern Virginia and flank Lee's army. And eventually, the war would be won by Grant using all kinds of flanking maneuvers. Flanking maneuvers by armies oftentimes, if they're pulled off properly, work because you get around the rear of your opponent and they may not know you're there,
right,
and attack where they don't expect it. Still back in these days, back from the Civil War, and one of the reasons why the casualties were so tremendous during the Civil War is they were still fighting wars in the beginning, like wars had been fought for centuries before. Frontal assaults. We're just going to attack the other guy in the front.
You might have had a rifle, but you had a bayonet, and that was
you're just going to go straight at him. Yeah. I mean, look at even the Battle of Gettysburg. The biggest part of that battle, Pickett's charge, was just, we're going to just charge across the field and try to attack you. And that's why casualties were so great. By the end of the war, that had changed. In fact, people say the Civil War was the first modern war that they started in centuries before, but they finished up in a different way. And these flanking maneuvers and so on. So Burnside was, and incidentally, by the way, Ambrose Burnside, sideburns. Yeah. He had very bushy, long sideburns.
So that's where that
And that's where that comes from, sideburns.
Right.
It is. It's not just the weather. Right.
There you go.
History is all kinds of things. So what he was going to do, he felt he could flank, move his army quickly in 48 hours, build a pontoon bridge across the Rappahannock, because the Union engineers were great at building pontoon bridges, allowing all kinds of rivers to be crossed. So he was going to move them across the Rappahannock, flank Lee's army and win a decisive victory, increase the morale of the Union, but also bring a much quicker end to the war. Remember, this is just the beginning of 1863. The war would ultimately last another 2 years with hundreds of thousands of dead after this.
So how did the weather just mess up his plans?
Well, the month leading up to it had been very dry across Virginia, the mid-Atlantic states, down into the northern part of the South. And so the ground was pretty solid. I mean, that was important. The roads in those days were obviously not
just mud.
They were mud. This was dirt, right? They were not paved well.
Right.
They were only paved in cities. I mean, the country roads were
That wasn't even the paving that we know today.
They weren't, unless the Romans did it centuries before.
Right, and they were better at it than
They knew how to do it. And in fact, we use their building techniques for roads today. But
that's a story for another day.
Right, it is. So he felt that he was going to be able to do that. So as soon as the Union forces started to move, it started raining lightly, but the roads were still okay. But then it turned into a downpour, and it was a situation that lasted for about 4 days long. So you can imagine that logistical problems started almost immediately.
Right.
They started to lay this pontoon bridge across the Rappahannock. It started to rise. They had to reconfigure. From an engineering standpoint, they could still deal with it. So that caused a huge traffic jam that snarled the Army's progress. In one day, there was a quote that the 5th Regiment from New York only moved a mile.
Wow.
So you had tens of thousands, actually 100,000 troops all trying to get across this pontoon bridge, and everything is bogged down
in
the mud.
And they're stuck in the mud, right?
Right.
Yep.
And so the element of surprise, it was gone.
Yeah, they had signs up, right? Like as people were traveling along, right?
So the Confederates saw what was going on. They moved their troops around. And in fact, there were signs that the Confederate Army posted up, said, Burnside's army stuck in the mud. And it became known as the Mud March. And ultimately what happened was there was no attack. There was no battle. they had to turn back because the element of surprise was gone. Half their troops were still across the northern part of Rappahannock. They couldn't even cross. So it really affected the battle. If it had been dry, we don't know the outcome,
right,
obviously.
Right.
But if it was dry, Burnside did have the initiative. He would have flanked Lee. That doesn't mean he would have won the battle, but he might have. And if he had won this large battle, maybe the war would have ended, shortened. But it didn't, because the weather directly intervened in what was going on. Now, today, if situations like that arose, the weather forecast for the Army, Burnside's Army, if it was modern times, would have known that this was storm was going to develop and stall probably on the Virginia Capes, so that we can, you know, look at current situations and understand what happened. Probably it was an easterly flow off the ocean and it just kept it moist. They would have known that, and they wouldn't have done that maneuver. They would have done it quicker. They wouldn't have done it at all. There would have been all kinds of differences. But in those days, they didn't know that. And that's one of the reasons why after the war, the U.S. Army Signal Corps was the precursor to the National Weather Service that started right after the Civil War, because it was obvious that they needed to know better weather information, what was coming.
You know, these are the kinds of stories that Evan and I will be talking about month to month. Looking forward to February, but that's great stuff. And, I think sometimes we're going to struggle because there's three or four stories from a month that we might want to talk about. But I thought these were two good ones here.
You know, and it's interesting, Dean, as we go and do this each month, there's so many military engagements that were dependent almost 100% on the weather, and very historical and determinative in the course of history in the United States, from George Washington's retreat from Long Island during the Battle of Long Island. He was able to escape in the fog, to the fact that maybe the biggest victory outside of Yorktown was at Saratoga, when the troops that were invading, the British troops from Canada, were turned back and then ultimately surrendered and got European countries, France and Spain, on our side, was the fact that it was a situation where they were in a bad spot. The British Army tried to retreat, but then it rained and they got stuck in the mud, just like Burnside did. There's just time after time after time like that throughout history that the weather really had a profound impact on the outcome of battles and wars. It's pretty amazing.
And friends, our conversations with Evan will be coming back every month here. What we're going to do now, as we resume the Everything Under the Sun podcast going forward, is we're going to start every week leading off with our first Rays of Focus segment, as we have before. And it's going to be a big ticket item, a big storm that's going on, or a big piece of weather news that we want to discuss. We're going to get experts and sound and voices about that big story up first. And then in our second segment each week, we're going to kind of split it up in that idea that I talked about previously, where things where the weather meets your life. Well, weather and history meet, and we just talked about that with Evan. We expect, once we get into February, to put that at the beginning of the month. Weather and sports, something close to my heart, and that's something we'll be doing probably in the second podcast of the month. We're also going to be talking about things like science and gardening and lifestyle issues that we'll sporadically get in there too. In fact, like next week, our second segment is going to be about the first exoplanet that they discovered with the James Webb telescope. So amazing stuff that is going to intrigue you and get you interested in talking, and we'll be able to get you more information. And we also hope to kind of weave in our stories with things that they're doing on our AccuWeather.com network and AccuWeather.com as well, and things that you can see in the app. So this is the plan going forward. That first Rays of Focus, the big weather story, people talking about the weather, what they're saying, what they've been feeling, and then a second segment that talks about the weather and your life as we go through it. And we'll be giving you all that information on this as we go through and go forward. I'm very indebted to my great executive producers, Ken Prell and Andrew Robb, for all their hard work behind the scenes. Thanks again to our guests, Bill Waddell and John Porter, and for our hundreds of team members who work hard every day to make your life better by weatherproofing your life with our AccuWeather app and our AccuWeather.com stories and information and our AccuWeather Network and AccuWeather Now. For all of us, thanks for listening. We'll be here next week. This is Everything Under the Sun from AccuWeather.com.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. Be sure to subscribe to, rate, and review Everything Under the Sun on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And of course, if you have an idea for a future podcast, just email us at accuweather.podcast@accuweather.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.